Good morning, church. We are going to be reading from John chapter 10, verse 1 to 21. Grab your apps. If you don't have a Bible with you, there are Bibles on the aisles there. Feel free to take one, and if you want to keep it, it is a gift for you. And we are on page 993. I am the good shepherd. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of a stranger. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus again said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved, and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I come that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. There was again a division among the Jews because of these words. Many of them said, he has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him? Others said, these are not the words of one who was oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?
You may have a seat. One real quick shameless plug for something coming up this weekend. Our team going to Haiti has a trivia night Saturday night. And if you don't have anything going on, or even if you do, you should cancel your plans so you can do this, right? We still have some tables left, and it would be awesome if some of you would just get 8 or 10 people and join us. $200, which isn't a huge price for 8 or 10 people at a table, and you're going to have a blast, and you will help this team go do missions and make an impact at House of Hope in Tabar, Haiti, and it will be your effort and spending an evening with us will do a world of good. So if you have questions or you want to go on that just want to learn more about it, you can step out to our information table after a service, and you can hear about that. Several years ago, another mission trip I went on, we went to Wales. Wales was beautiful. It was always middle of summer. It was cool, 60s, 70s, green hills everywhere. And those green hills had these fluffy little things everywhere you look. Sheep, and they look cute from a distance. You get close to sheep, they're kind of ugly. Lambs are cute, sheep are ugly, but you see them out in a field, there's just something really sweet and beautiful about that. And we kind of at first fell in love with them until at night we were sleeping in our dorms where we were staying, and the sheep were right outside, and they went baa all night. Wanted to kill sheep. To the glory of God, I wanted to get rid of these sheep. They were annoying and would not stop, and we did not sleep all week. But watching sheep there, it's just kind of cool to watch. Well, we have a sheep analogy here, and Jesus is speaking to people who understand the context or the analogy. I need to set that up for you, okay? Because I don't think we have any shepherds in our crowd today. Anybody, any shepherds, anybody, got a flock of sheep or goats they're hanging out with, or... we probably don't even have any farmers or ranchers, but even if we did, the way sheep and herding sheep that we would see in our current context, And the way it would have gone on then would have been drastically different. Today you would see one shepherd or maybe a couple guys with several dogs and a huge flock of sheep. And, you know, usually the farmer owns the ground, owns the sheep, hires people to work it. But in the ancient time, especially the context of this story, as Jesus kind of uses this analogy of the good shepherd, it is in a setting where shepherding was quite different. And so what would happen is you would have a shepherd who had his flock. And shepherding was fairly common. There were quite a few shepherds. The raising of sheep was a major industry in Israel. The making of all kinds of things with the wool. Actually, sheep were also, they would eat lamb. And so there was a lot in the industry of shepherding. And usually shepherds didn't own huge flocks. They might have a dozen or two dozen. Maybe a huge flock would be three dozen sheep. And they would be their sheep. But the shepherd invested everything in his life in those sheep. They were his sheep. And he would get up in the morning and he would go to the pen, and I'll talk a little bit about the pen here in a minute, but he would take his sheep, he would call them by name, and he would call them out, and his sheep would follow him. And sheep learn the voice of their shepherd. And the way they would learn the voice of their shepherd, the way they learn the voice of their shepherd is the fact that the shepherd invests his life, invests his time. He pulls, when they were lambs, he would pull them up on his lap. He would cuddle them. He would love them. He would talk to them. When they would be out in the field, he would spend time just walking around. He didn't just go sit on a rock and just let the sheep go out where they were going, wherever they wanted to. He would invest in them. He would spend time like interacting with them. And they would get to know his voice. And so Jesus says in the text, my sheep know my voice, and when I call, they come running. That is actually true in shepherding. Believe it or not, sheep are like this. Goats are not. In fact, Jesus, in another place in the New Testament, talks about one of his judgments and calls it the separation of the sheep and the goats. I used to read that for years ago. What is going on here? Until I understood a little bit about the idea of shepherding, and that is this. If a shepherd calls his sheep, they hear his voice, and they respond to the voice of the shepherd, and they will come running towards the shepherd. They will ignore other people, but they will run towards the shepherd. On the other hand, goats, when they hear the voice of the shepherd, look up and go, yeah, whatever, dude, and go right back to their life and eat where they want to eat and go where they want to go. Sheep follow the shepherd. Goats, you got to beat them senselessly to get them to go anywhere. And in fact, I don't know if you're aware of this, there is a breed of goat called the Tennessee Fainting Goat. Have you ever heard of these? They were actually bred to protect sheep. I mean, how would you like to be this animal? Like the whole purpose of your breeding was so that the wolf would eat you. And they bred this characteristic into sheep so that, or into these goats. And basically the idea is that anytime somebody comes close and scares them, or if a predator come, instead of running, instead of freaking out, they lock up and fall over. That's why they're called the Tennessee Fainting Goat. Well, Heidi and I at a church we were at real young in our ministry, this guy had this herd of them. It was just a novelty. And if you'd like get behind the barn and be real quiet, they'd all be in the pen, and you could run up and go, ah! And they would all just, boom! And the whole, like 15 goats would just fall over. It was hilarious to watch. You know, goats are just stubborn, hard-headed, and they thought, you know, we'll protect our sheep by doing this, because sheep will hear the voice, and they will ignore everybody else's voice. Jesus uses that illustration. We actually have a video. I want you to see this. Somebody tried to test this idea to see if sheep would follow any voice or only the voice of the shepherd. Check this out. So when Jesus says, my sheep know my voice, I call to them and they follow me, they will ignore the voice of anybody else, but they will come to me. What you need to understand is that people in that culture totally got what he was saying. They were like, okay, I get this. And so what a shepherd would do, a shepherd did not, in our day, a shepherd would lead his sheep by sending the dogs to herd them. But in that day, the shepherd would develop such a relationship with the sheep that he led by leading them. He would be the first to go, and they would follow him. So he'd call them by name, and then he would lead them, and he would lead them out to pastures. He would lead them to waters, quiet waters, so they could get a drink. He would lead them to shade during the heat of the afternoon. He would lead them, and they would follow him, and it was the following of the shepherd that kept the safe sheep, that provided the food for them, that made sure they were in the right place. Because to be honest with you, sheep are really dumb. Which makes it a great illustration for us. Because we are like sheep. One of the things, if a shepherd is not doing his job, sheep will start eating grass, and they will eat grass, and they will walk in a circle till they come to the poop that they pooped, and then they'll just start eating their poop, and it will get them really sick and eventually kill them. And that's the way, like, if they are left to themselves, that is exactly what they would do. They need a shepherd that will keep them moving in the right direction, take them to the right places to protect them and take care of them. And at the end of the day, what happened in Israel is that normally a town would have one pen. It wouldn't be multiple pens. People didn't own their own land and their own barns and their own places. And so a small town like Bethlehem, which is where Jesus was born, was a shepherding village. And that town would have a pen, and all the shepherds would bring their sheep and put them in the pen. And that pen had an opening that they could put a gate there, but normally what would happen is that one of the shepherds would spend the night laying on the ground, and that shepherd was the door. And nothing could get into the pen to get to the sheep, and the pen could, the sheep could not get out of the pen without the door opening itself up to them and allowing them to go free. And then what would happen in the morning is the different shepherds would then come with the door there in place, protecting, keeping the sheep from leaving. The shepherds would come in the morning and start calling out their sheep by name. And you'd have this pen full of maybe four or five different flocks of sheep, but the shepherd would start calling out to their sheep, and their sheep would hear their shepherd's voice just like this, hear their name called out, and would come to the shepherd, and then the shepherd would come to the gate. The gatekeeper, who was kind of the guarder of the gate, and that's referenced in here, the gatekeeper, who was kind of the guarder of the opening and the protector of the whole system, would then allow that shepherd, because he knew that shepherd, would allow that shepherd to take his sheep out of the pen, and then they would follow him, and then the next shepherd would come. And so Jesus uses this as a point, an illustration to demonstrate who he is and our relationship and our response to him as our Savior, our Redeemer, our Messiah. But the other thing you need to know is, you understand, that's kind of the setting. The other thing you need to know is that this text is set in the larger storyline of the Bible. And in the larger storyline of the Bible, to this Old Testament, these Hebrew people, the idea of shepherd and shepherding and who the shepherds were was so important. First of all, they knew that their story literally rested on God taking shepherds and making them awesome. Okay? So their whole storyline is tied to these three guys. You have this guy named Abraham, this guy named Moses, and this guy named David. Abraham was the father of their whole nation. Moses was their deliverer. And David was their great king. And all three of them started as shepherds. Abraham was a shepherd. Moses was a shepherd in the wilderness when he ran into the burning bush where God called him. David was the shepherd king. And from that, because they saw that God called the lowly, like shepherds were kind of, even though there were a lot of them, they were just kind of nobodies in culture. They didn't have power. They didn't have prestige. They weren't known. They were just guys out in the middle of nowhere. Because of the fact that God had called shepherd and made them leaders, meant that God had this place for anybody in the world. He loved his people, and he would call anybody. He could use anybody. But shepherds became great leaders because they understood how to lead sheep. And so what we have, on top of the fact that God called all these shepherds and made them leaders, there are tons of passages. I mean, just all kinds of Old Testament passages where God is referred to as the shepherd of his people, where Yahweh, the one true God of Israel, is his shepherd. You're probably familiar with the most famous one, which is Psalm 23 that starts, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." I was with a family this week who lost a 10-year-old girl to cancer, and they were just telling me how when somebody started reading the 23rd Psalm, there's just something about it that in that moment, you can't, like, the beauty of God's care for his people will just pull tears out of you knowing that he walks us through the shadow of the valley of death, right? But there's all kinds of other passages where it talks about Yahweh, the one true God of Israel, being the shepherd of his sheep. Ezekiel 34, there's this long passage where this beautiful imagery of God as the true shepherd, the good shepherd, leads his people and guides them. But then we are reminded that the problem that was going on in Israel is that what God as the true shepherd does, he is spirit. We need somebody tangible. We need somebody with skin on to help us out with this. And so God sent under-shepherds to his people. He sent people who he called to shepherd God's people on behalf of him. And one of the problems in Israel was that the leaders, the shepherds, the priests, the prophets, the other leaders in Israel were not good shepherds. They were looking, they would lead the people to make a buck or to get fame and fortune. Rather than having a sacrificial heart, they were terrible shepherds. And so now God's people were scattered and broken, like Jesus' own word said, like sheep without a shepherd. We get to the New Testament, and it's Jesus born in Bethlehem, the shepherding town, and God speaks through angels to shepherds, right? We have all the importance of these shepherds, and that culture understood this in fullness, and it's into this setting where God looks at these religious leaders, these Pharisees, who are now among these people who were supposed to be the shepherds of God's flock, who are absolutely failing them. They were rejecting their Messiah, oppressing the people, left in brokenness. John chapter 10 is a continuation of what was going on in John chapter 9. So if you've been with us, if you haven't, let me just kind of tee this up for you so you understand what's been going on. In John chapter 9, up till this point, Jesus has continually declared to them that he is God in the flesh, that the one true and living God became a human, dwelt among his people, and is making God known through the character and the person and the work and the words of Jesus. And so the Jewish religious leaders, the key leaders are these people called the Pharisees, have been rejecting Jesus. They want to get rid of Jesus. They feel like Jesus is a threat to their power, a threat to their pride, a threat to their way of life, and they want to get rid of Jesus. And to put them in the worst possible position, Jesus does this amazing act where he heals a blind man. Now, they see a man who's blind from birth. Jesus spits in a little mud or in a little dirt, makes mud out of his spit, which is totally weird, right? And then he rubs it on the eyes of this blind man. He tells him to go wash in this pool. And this man goes, washes in this pool of Siloam. And when he washes the mud off of his eyes, now he sees. And it creates this major controversy, which like ought to bother us, because the first response we should have, like if you knew a dude in your town, and maybe you didn't know him very well, but you're just familiar, and he's blind, he's been blind since he's been born, and he shows up one day, and all of a sudden he's like, man, I met this guy, he put mud on my eyes, I can see. Like we go, man, I would rejoice. I'd be like, woohoo, yes, what a moment, we gotta learn about this. But the religious leaders knew that if they acknowledged Jesus as the source of this miracle, they couldn't keep denying that he was who he claimed to be. And so they get in this argument with the man, and the man finally looks at him and goes, listen, I'm not sure exactly who he is, but this is what I do know. Once I was blind, but now I see. And then they come find Jesus, and Jesus is talking to the blind man, and Jesus says these words. He says, I did this to prove that I am the light of the world. And now, you who are blind now see, but the people who used to see are becoming blind. Well, the Pharisees hear that and they're like, hey boy, you saying we're blind? We're the good ones. We're the leaders. And it's in that context that chapter 10 starts. It's a continuation of this discussion as now Jesus is declaring who he is and indicting them for being like these shepherds from the Old Testament who God had sent, but they were horrible shepherds and had left the people broken and hurting, and now the people needed a good shepherd. And instead of that, he says things like, I am the good shepherd, the sheep. My sheep hear my voice. They come and follow me. I will take them out to pasture. He says, I am the door of the sheep, which like that these two illustrations work together now, you see. And he's saying, listen, nobody really gets into the pen unless he comes through the door. He's claiming exclusivity, and he is identifying himself both as the good shepherd. He's identifying himself with the God of the Old Testament, who is the good shepherd of his people, and the human shepherd who was among his people, who is present to be their shepherd. And he says, I am the good shepherd of the sheep. And here's the big idea. Those who are his sheep will hear his voice and will follow. And those who are not his sheep will just keep eating the grass in the spot they're in and ignore him. And it's that simple. He's just looking at these guys going, the reason you don't follow me is because you're not my sheep. You were putting your head down and going about your life thinking your life is all that. You were super important. You rule the world, and you were missing the good shepherd who's among you. You're not following him. And in the text, there are these amazing promises as Jesus makes it very clear what his purpose, like very clear what the purpose of God in sending Jesus into the world is. He makes it very clear. And there are two promises that come out of this text that are just beautiful. The first one is in verse 16. If you have your Bible, just look at that verse where he says, and I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice, so there will be one flock, one shepherd. Now here's what Jesus is saying. He's looking at people who are all Jewish at the time. They're all part of the descendants of this guy named Abraham, all part of this covenant community who have believed in the one God of the Old Testament together. They have worshipped in the temple together. They have read the Old Testament law together. They are Jewish people. And he's speaking to people who are all Jewish, and he's saying, listen, here's what's going on. I have one flock, but there are sheep that are not in this pen. And I'm going to go find them. I'm going to call out their name, and they're going to join us so that in the end, there will be one flock with one shepherd. What in the world is he saying? And this is a beautiful promise that is connected to the whole storyline of the Bible. Remember that first shepherd, Abraham? When God called this guy named Abraham, he said, listen, I'm going to make you a great nation. And when I make you a great nation, all the peoples of the world will be blessed because of you and because of one of your descendants. He says the purpose of Abraham is not just a great nation. The purpose of Abraham is all nations will be blessed. Well, then the storyline of the Bible unfolds this beautiful purpose of God, that his purpose in all of history is this, that the one true and living God is at work in the world to redeem a people for his own possession. And that people will be made up of every tribe, every language, every country, every ethnic group. Heaven will be the most multicultural, diverse place on the planet. And it will be a place like, I think we kind of think, like sometimes as white folk, we kind of think that what's going to happen is we're going to sing these, like what's going to happen is everybody in heaven is going to show up and we're going to do worship and we're going to do praise and we're going to do stuff like we do it. They're going to sing our music, have our idea. I've been in a lot of churches where that was kind of the mindset. We're going to read the King James Bible and sing with a piano and organ, and it's going to be, if it's going to be that way in heaven, we need to be doing that here, right? But what's but what's going to happen is heaven is going to be so diverse, so multicultural, we as white folk will be one small group in a huge multicultural diverse thing. Our tendency is to be very Jewish in our mindset to think, the real people of God are us, and God's going to put some people around us that will be helpful. Instead of understanding that his purpose is to redeem a people from the globe, that it is a global mission, and it is secured. So that in one very clear way, when Jesus came to the earth, he came to redeem his people, and he will not miss one of them. That God has given the sheep to Jesus, and that Jesus' purpose will be fulfilled. He did not come to earth for the hopes that maybe some people would follow. He came to redeem his people, and his sheep know his voice. And they follow. And it is a multicultural, global promise, a people for his glory, for his own possession from all tribes and all nations. But then there's a second promise that gives us a second understanding of God's purpose, and that is a personal promise. Look at verse 10. I love this verse. This is one of those, like, you ought to memorize this verse. If you're like not a believer in Jesus, you're not sure what this Christianity is all about, I hope you will see this. The purpose of Jesus in your life is in this verse. He said this, verse 10. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. He is contrasting the thief with his purpose. Who's the thief? I've always thought it was Satan. I think that that's part of it, that there is a dimension to this world that is evil and broken. But what happens is in a broken, fallen world, there are all kinds of voices that are speaking into our lives. And those voices are calling us to some kind of morality, some kind of values, some kind of attitudes, some kind of goals, some kind of purpose that has good things, but it's Christless. It sees Jesus as kind of my helper, maybe, my homeboy. He's kind of called alongside to help me when I'll figure things out, and then Jesus will support me, be there for me. Or maybe it's just called to live my life the way I want to. That's kind of the drumbeat of our culture, that ultimately good is, you know, finding your own identity, being your true self. And here's what Jesus is saying. When you have a voice in your life that is not leading you to the voice of the shepherd, the ultimate purpose behind that voice is to steal, kill, and destroy. We see this in our own world. Ethics, values, morality that says ignore the voice of the shepherd. And people champion these causes, and it leaves devastation in the wake. Because the thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy. But Jesus says, I've come. I've come that they may have life and have it to the full. That literally the purpose of Jesus for us is to give us life. Not just the fact that, like, today we breathe. I'm alive. Woohoo, I woke up. There's another day. That's not entirely what he's talking about. He is speaking of life as God intended us to have life. He's speaking of life that is purposeful, that is meaningful, that is full. It is a life that is, the psalmist says, yea, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil because God, you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. It is a fullness, a beauty of life that has Christ in the fullness of his life no matter what we walk through. I was in two funerals this week. How do you make sense of those moments? One of them, a 50-year-old woman who died because of cancer. Another, a 10-year-old girl who died because of cancer. I hugged family members of people I loved, and I watched this beautiful tension between grief and joy that only happens in people who know Christ and know the God who says, I have come that they may have life and have it more abundantly. I listened to two parents stand on a stage yesterday and talk about the faith of their daughter who has changed people as she was in a casket in front of them. And they were saying, man, we don't know how to make sense of this, but there is joy. How does that happen? I knew there were people who didn't know Jesus and they're going, I don't know how to make sense of this. And the only way you can make sense of this is to understand Jesus' word. I have come that they might have life and have it to the full. This is what you and I want, right? What you and I want is for our lives to matter, our lives to be full, to have meaning, to have purpose, to have joy. And here's what Jesus is saying. When you understand the shepherd and you learn what it means to be his sheep and you follow him, he will give you life. And it will be full, meaningful, joyous, wonderful. That's the point of this text. In the end, there's all kinds of different metaphors mixed in about the thief and about the wolf. We'll talk a little bit about these in just a second. But if you don't miss anything else, there are these two promises. One is that God is has a global promise of redeeming his people. He has his fold. They are his own. He is going to redeem them. He has purposed this by coming. And he talks about how he did this. I lay my life down for my sheep. He says, I have authority to lay my life down. Now, watch this. There's a sense in which all of us could choose to take the authority over our own life and lay our lives down. We could jump in front of a bullet for our children, right? I would lay my life down. There is a series that makes me mourn that it is being watched by millions of teenagers that is all about 13 reasons about suicide when somebody, a girl, has chosen to take authority over her own life. And it grieves my heart that there are so many teenagers dealing with brokenness. Not just teenagers, adults, people dealing with the brokenness of darkness. They can't find joy, they can't find meaning, and they take the authority over their own life. You can do that, but what you cannot do is take the authority and take it up again. Don't miss that in the text. That's what Jesus says. At the end of this text, he says, I have authority to lay down my life. Nobody's taking it from me. He's looking at these people who are conspiring to kill him and go, you cannot take my life. I will lay my life down for my sheep. You can't take my life, but you also can't keep me dead. I can take authority over my own life. I cannot take authority over my own resurrection. I can't die and then make myself come back to life. And Jesus says, this is what God has given me. He has allowed me the authority to give up my life and then to take it back. And this is the way he will redeem his sheep. And this is the way he pours fullness and beauty into our lives. This is the hope that we have, that Christ as our good shepherd. And so let's talk about, what does a shepherd do? And in this, for those of you who are followers of Jesus, these are just reminders of what it looks like for me to hear his voice and follow him. But for those of you who are here this morning and your story is like, I've heard about Christianity, I'm not sure exactly what it is, or maybe you know what it is, but you've never really followed Jesus, hopefully this will be a point where you'll hear the voice of the shepherd and respond. And four things that a shepherd does that will help us understand what it looks like to know the good shepherd. These are all embedded in the text. I'll make little references to some of the verses, but these are embedded, kind of interwoven all through the text. But this is shepherding. This is what shepherds do. Four things. The first thing, the good shepherd knows his sheep. He knows his sheep. Look at verse 3. Again, he says, to him the gatekeeper opens. I can't read that verse without thinking of Rick Moranis. Those of you who are Ghostbusters fans, the gatekeeper. Anyway, that's a terrible reference there, but a few of you laugh. The rest of you are like, you need help. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. Do you hear that? He's saying, listen, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and they are my own. They are mine. That's the beauty of being a follower of Jesus. Look at how he says this again in verse 14. In verse 14, he says, I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. A shepherd knows his sheep. He's not saying, listen, here's the idea. There's just a whole bunch of sheep in my pasture. I send the dogs. I keep them together. I don't know a whole lot about them. They're just sheep. No, he is functioning as a shepherd, a good shepherd who owns his sheep. He knows them by name. He has named them. He knows them by name. He knows their personality. He knows the ones that will tend to wander away and the ones that will stay close. He knows the ones that are ornery and the ones that are just passive and gentle. He knows them by name. He calls them and they follow him because they know him. A shepherd knows his sheep. And the beauty of this is that God is saying, I know my sheep. Jesus is saying, I know my sheep. I call them by name. They follow me. He has this love relationship. It is a reminder that at the core, when we talk about the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ, when we talk about Christianity, we're not inviting you to a system. Well, if you'll just do this, this, and this, then God will do this, this, and this. He'll meet you halfway. What we are calling you to is to know the shepherd. We want you to know Jesus, who is our messianic king, who is our good shepherd, who is the good one. He loves us. He is for us. He is with us. And the promise here is that the shepherd knows his sheep. He knows what they're going through. I know some of you, like, it's really hard to get through your brain and into your heart the idea that you are loved. Our whole world says, if I perform, then I'll be accepted. Like that's the posture of everything in our world. From the business world to many of you, your own homes. Many of you, the homes you grew up in, you felt the weight of a dad or a mom who said, I only love you when you're a good kid. And we embedded that in our religion. I remember hearing songs that said, if I obey, if I'm a good person, if I just do things right, then God will love me. But that is not the gospel. The gospel is that God loves you, not because of you, but in spite of you. He loves you. And sometimes we come and we go, listen, I've really messed my life up. You don't know the mistakes I've made. You don't know. God already knows you, and Christ already loves you. He knows his sheep. He calls them by name. And part of understanding what it means to be a follower of Jesus is to know that you're loved before you did anything. You are loved just because God loves you. I was talking with this dad Friday night. They've dealt with 3 years with this girl going through the darkest shadow. But out of it, like there's stories of this little 10-year-old girl who was like full of energy, looking at people and go, listen, you need to know Jesus. I know you don't know Jesus. You need to know Jesus. And we heard one story of her looking at a lady who didn't know, have a relationship with Christ at all, and just basically telling this 10-year-old girl, telling this adult woman, you need to know Jesus. I love Jesus. You need to know Jesus. Everybody should know Jesus. And within a year, that lady became a follower of Jesus Christ. But for this dad, it was dark and hard and broken. He was struggling. And God met him. In a moment, he told me, he said, listen, I'd heard from his pastors that over the last month to month and a half, that God was doing something that was just unexplainable. Like as his daughter was nearing death, God was doing something that was just unexplainable in his life. And this is what he told me. He said, I was in my room with my daughter. She had just lost the use of her legs. And I kept praying, God, heal. Why? Why won't you do something? She loves you. We love you. What? And his faith had just, like, he was losing grip with his faith that was struggling to begin with. And this is what he said. He said, I was alone in there. He said, I can't describe this. The only thing I can tell you is that room filled with the light of the glory of God. He was there, and I am changed. He knows his sheep. He's with them. He cares for them. For his glory. She did not survive. He chose not to heal her, but I am telling you that the gospel was proclaimed to firemen and to other people in this culture through her life and through that ceremony yesterday and through the event. And God is good to his people. He will be with Dave and Robin in the coming days. He will be a shepherd who leads them because he knows his sheep. Jesus, the good shepherd, knows his sheep. He leads his sheep. And what we're talking about here is that the sheep, the shepherd calls their name and they hear him. How does God do this? He does this through faithful proclamation. Like Jesus is not physically with us today. But what Jesus has done is he's commissioned us, the church, to faithfully proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. And so here I am today, as best I can, having studied this text, standing in front of you, telling you that there is a good shepherd. He loves you. He is for you. He has laid down his life for his sheep. He has taken it up again. The good shepherd is Jesus, who is God, who came in the flesh, and he lived the perfect life. And the proclamation is going out. And what happens is that God, the Holy Spirit, uses that in the lives of people to open their eyes, to open their hearts. They will believe and they hear the voice of the shepherd. Like, I am not here so you will hear me. I'm hoping you will not leave here. My pride kind of gets wrapped up in this. I do hope you go home, man, that dude was awesome. But the truth of the matter is what I hope will really come is that there will be people in here who will go, I heard Jesus. Not I heard Mike. And something happened in my heart today that opened my heart. Like I heard the voice of the shepherd. If you are a follower of Jesus, the reason you are a follower of Jesus is that God used somebody who told you about Jesus, and in that moment you heard not the voice of your friend, not the voice of your pastor, not the voice of somebody else. You heard the voice of the shepherd who called you by your name and said, follow me. If you're here today and you're not a follower of Jesus, listen to his voice. Respond by trusting in Jesus. The shepherd leads his sheep. He says, I'm the door. Nobody gets in through, except through me. But then I'm also the shepherd who calls them by name, and they leave the pen when I call them. They hear my voice and they follow me. He's also the shepherd who leads them to places where they can hear and enjoy, and he leads them by going in front of them, and he leads them by leading them. Listen, let's be honest. Most of us, when we talk about Psalm 23, what we really ought to say is, the Lord is my consultant, I shall not want. Right? What we want is somebody who will take my ideas and make them bigger, who will, like, I've got my plan, I've got my ideas, I'm going to live my life the way I want to, but God, I want you to come in and help me out. Be a consultant to help me fill in the spaces that I don't have figured out yet. We want a consultant, we don't want a shepherd. And I'm like this. Listen, there are so many places in my life where I think the path to a full life is in me doing the things the way I want to do them. We hear this in all kinds of things, like the sexual ethic. Followers of Jesus are called to live a certain way with their bodies and with their values and with their attitudes when it comes to sexuality, with gender and those sort of things. And it's not easy. And it's a really broken, messed up world. But what I hear so often is, times have changed, we need to get past this moment. And the truth of the matter is, what all, like our whole culture is saying is, you can't not be free to just live your life the way you want to and still have a meaningful life. The way to full and meaningful life is to live your life the way you want to. And we believe it. We don't believe it when Jesus says, I have come that they might have life and have it more abundantly. But do not miss the connection. That abundant life is following the shepherd. It's following the shepherd. The way to live in fullness is to listen to the voice of the shepherd. We do this by being in church, being in community, by loving Jesus, by trusting in him, by opening the scriptures. He leads his sheep. He leads them to mission. He involves us in that great global plan so that when we come to know Jesus, he uses us beyond ourselves. I have come that they may have life and have it more abundantly. The way, the fullness of life is to follow Jesus as he leads. He leads his sheep. Third thing he does, not only does he know his sheep and lead his sheep, he feeds his sheep. He feeds his sheep. Verse 9 says, Jesus says, I am the door. And he talks about the fact in verse 9. He says, I am the door, and anyone who enters by me, he will be saved and will go out and find pasture. Hear the beauty of that? Pasture. That they will... He will take you to the right spots. He will feed you. Some of those pastures are in really dark, hard places. Some of those pastures are on mountaintops. But it's knowing that you have a shepherd with you who is feeding you. And the primary means that he gives to feed us as followers of Jesus is his word. To open the scriptures, to interact, to read them, to know Christ through his word, to be fed by the scriptures. He knows his sheep. He leads his feet. He sheds his feet. He feeds his sheep. And he protects his sheep. A shepherd does these things. He knows, leads, feeds, protects. Protects his sheep. From who? He says it. Two different places, he says it in different ways. First of all, he protects us from the wolves. He says, listen, if a wolf wants my sheep, they have to go through me. He says, the hirelings, they're shepherding to make a buck. They're going to run when the wolf comes. But the true shepherd, who owns his sheep, they are his sheep, he knows them, the wolf has to go through me. Now, that is when he jumps into the discussion where he says, I lay down my life and I take it up again. He's looking at these Jewish leaders going, y'all are really wolves. And you're going to take my life, but I lay it down for my sheep and I'm going to take it up again. But the bottom line is he is saying that he protects his sheep from the wolves. He defends them. He will lead them back, he will care for them, and he protects them from the wolves, that when we stay under the leadership of Christ as our true and good shepherd, that he protects his sheep from the wolves, but he also protects his sheep from themselves, because we will go back to eating our own poop. and call it glorious. And what happens here is that it is the shepherd who loves and leads his sheep and protects us from ourselves. And so one of the things that happens in shepherding is if there was a sheep who just continually wandered off. And they would ignore wolves, so wolf would eat them. And if he had a sheep, or especially a lamb, who was just kind of that headstrong, bull-headed lamb, he would take that lamb and he would do something that sounds terrible. He would literally break the legs of that lamb. And then until that lamb was healed, he would put the lamb up on his shoulders, and everywhere he led the sheep, he would carry that lamb on his shoulders till the lamb healed. And what happened is the lamb would then get so close to the shepherd, the lamb just wouldn't ever leave his presence. And it sounds brutal, but the alternative is dinner for the wolf. He is loving that sheep by protecting it from himself. God's love for us is this, that he disciplines us, he leads us, he pours challenges into us, but his goal is to change us by his glory. And so he loves us by protecting us from wolves and from ourselves. And this is the beautiful call of God, the good shepherd. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd of my sheep. They hear my voice and follow me. That's what he means. Do you know the voice of the shepherd? Are you listening for it? Or are you content to let the world speak in your life and tell you how to have a full and meaningful life? I want you to know the shepherd. If you do, are you following? Are you paying attention to his voice? Are you following? You will probably notice that the places in your life that your life is not full are the places that you don't have wholly submitted to the will of Christ. At least that's my story. Follow the shepherd. Psalm 23 is a great psalm. And we're going to close the sermon with this. The band's come up here. We're going to sing a few more songs worshiping our shepherd, worshiping Jesus as the true and better shepherd. But I want us to together confess this. And so Psalm 23 is a great psalm. And what I want to do is the closing prayer of my sermon is I'm going to invite you to stand with me. And we are going to read this psalm together as a confession, as a prayer, a confession together about the Lord being our shepherd. If you're here today and you have not trusted in Christ, maybe today the voice of the shepherd is ringing through my measly, broken voice, but you are hearing the voice of Jesus calling you. Even today, I would encourage you that this is a great moment for you just to turn from yourself and to pray and say, Jesus, I trust you. Save me, redeem me, rescue me. This would be a great moment. At the end of our service, we will have some people up here. They'll be down over here. And I would encourage you, if you have questions or if something didn't make sense or if something did make sense and you'd like to talk about what it means to be a follower of Jesus, we'd love for you to come down here and have a conversation. We can help you figure out what that looks like. And for all of us, this is the chance for us to worship and celebrate the goodness of our shepherd. He is a good shepherd. Amen? Let's read this together. Psalm of David, the Lord is my shepherd. All right, here we go. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Believe. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies, and you anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen.